Within hours of the announcement of Justice Sandra Day O'Connor's resignation, long before there's an actual nominee to spar over, Democrats and Republicans are already locked in a debate about the debate. The haggling continued during the Sunday public affairs shows. Senators from the Judiciary Committee argued over what, if anything, might justify a filibuster. Democrat Joseph Biden was on CBS.
I have no intention of filibustering somebody. It depends on who the president sends, but I could see a circumstance.
And also whether nominees should be asked about views on issues that could come before the court, issues such as gay marriage or abortion. Here's an exchange between Senators John Cornyn and Charles Schumer.
It's completely inappropriate to ask nominees to make promises to politicians about how they're going to vote should a case come before them.
I think it's a dereliction of our responsibilities if we don't ask these kinds of questions.
To wade through some of these questions, we turn to Joan Biskupic. She's a Supreme Court correspondent for USA Today. Joan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
First of all, is this primarily saber-rattling here, or does the Judiciary Committee actually settle on rules of engagement before a hearing process begins?
There is a bit of saber-rattling going on, because this is an age-old question, and senators have asked about the issues of the day. For decades now, they've asked about abortion. They've even asked about gay marriage in the past. It's not a question of what they can ask. It's more of a question of how far the nominee will go in terms of satisfying the senators with his or her answers.
It's important to remember that an appearance before this committee was not always a part of the process. At what point did a nominee's judicial and even personal ideology become a robust line of inquiry in these hearings?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at just who's on our court, Chief Justice William Rehnquist first went before the Judiciary Committee in fall of 1971 when he was nominated by Richard Nixon. And even then, Democratic senators asked about his ideology. They also asked about his prior record, which I think will be relevant to whoever gets nominated today. William Rehnquist had been an assistant attorney general in the Nixon administration, and he had been quite involved with harsh Justice Department policies on wiretapping and other government surveillance. And senators asked him about some of his stands.
Since you mentioned Chief Justice Rehnquist, I'm also wondering about Justice Antonin Scalia, whose nomination process was going on concurrently with that. Was he also grilled on his ideology at the time?
Oh, he was. But did he charm those senators. He ended up being approved unanimously when the time came. And he avoided answering a lot of questions of substance, but he really made the senators feel as if they were getting answers. At the time, Senator Ted Kennedy even talked about how then-Judge Scalia appeared to be in the mainstream. And so it goes to show that it's a matter of trying to satisfy senators with some answers, but maybe not going all the way to say, this is the way I will rule on something.
Joan, what about the potential use of a filibuster? Is this still within the Democrats' arsenal with that bipartisan compromise that was hammered out 6 weeks ago by these 14 senators? Under that deal, a judicial nominee could be filibustered only under so-called extraordinary circumstances. With the approval of staunchly conservative judges like Priscilla Owen or Janice Rogers Brown or William Pryor, what would now justify a filibuster?
Well, the expression extraordinary circumstances has never been sufficiently defined for these situations. It will fall to those 14 senators in the middle who crafted that compromise and really the kind of core center of the Senate. If President Bush nominates someone who seems extreme toward the right wing, I am sure that there will be a lot of discussion among those members of the Senate over whether this is the kind of nominee that should face a filibuster or not. And senators in the past did not have to resort to filibusters. They were able to defeat the nominee who they felt wasn't sufficiently ready for the job. When you think of Robert Bork, the Senate was controlled by Democrats at the time, so there wasn't the need to sort of force a filibuster, but there was a very thorough airing of his views, and it really gave the senators enough information to end up with that vote against him. And I think that so much of what we have now flows from that very antagonistic situation that we had with Robert Bork in 1987.
Joan Biskupic covers the Supreme Court for USA Today. Joan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Michelle.